Hello and welcome to a special episode of The Big Fight. You know, sometimes it's good to get away from the political wranglings and what someone is saying to somebody and what someone is doing to somebody and try and sit back and have a slightly intelligent, if I can use that word, discussion on where we are, where we are looking ahead at, and what should be some of the policy parameters that we should be trying to do from a theoretical point of view. And it's interesting to have that discussion now on the economy, because there's been a lot of debate and discussion around which direction should the economy go, what should we be trying to do, should we be having more taxes, less taxes, where should the real priorities be, what should be the real focus of the government, are jobs drying up, and therefore what should be the solution, is India going to catch up with China or not catch up? Lots and lots of questions are always there at the back of our head. An interesting new book being written by somebody who's actually on the Prime Minister's Economic Advisory Council, Surjit Bhalla, just come up with a lot of theory, and this is the book here, which I'm going to refer to a little later, and also get him in again right here. So he's put forward some basic theses as to what he believes is the real issue at hand, and some of them are really controversial. So on this episode of The Big Fight, Surjit Bhalla is going to be joining us to tell us why he thinks a lot of the common perceptions around what we should be doing with the economy might actually be wrong. A lot of the conventional could actually be wrong. And if what you're saying is correct, Surjit, then the implications for policy could be very different to what people think the implications should be. Yeah. Is that going to be changing our economic policy? We don't know. I don't think you know necessarily either.
And that also I don't know.
But we do have somebody with us who might know some of the answers. Amitabh Kant, of course, CEO of Niti Aayog, one of our most dynamic bureaucrats, been shaping a lot of the economic thinking of the government and certainly in the direction going forward. So we're going to get him in to talk about some of that. And then after that, so we're going to spend 10, 15 minutes just sort of having a discussion on this and trying to set out what the basic premise is. And then we're going to be opening it up to a very special panel of people who will be helping us discuss this from a political point of view. So Rajiv Gowda joining us from the Congress Party, Jagdish Shettigar, who's been an economic advisor to Prime Minister Atal Bihari Vajpayee. Both of them are going to be with us. Harsh Mandar is going to be with us as well, and Yogendra Yadav. Both their views will be interesting because of some of what Surjit Bhalla is saying is actually, I'm not sure they're going to be agreeing with it very much. So, Surjit, if I could start off perhaps by my bash at trying to paraphrase what I think you're saying in the book, and you can say, Vikram, you're completely wrong, right? Okay. Which is very possible.
And so, you know, I won't hesitate to say that.
I know you won't hesitate to say that. So tell me, am I getting this correctly? And then we'll get you to explain some of these points. Yeah. What Surjit Bhalla seems to be saying is that contrary to what we all believe, that inequality globally has been rising. There's more and more inequality. The rich are getting richer. The poor, if not getting poorer, are actually staying more or less the same. He said that's actually not true. Inequality is falling. And therefore, the policies that we need to be following are not necessarily, you know, oh, the world's becoming very unequal, so we should do something about it. Premise number one.
Correct.
Correct so far?
Absolutely.
Okay, fine. Premise number two, he says that the real definition of why inequality would be falling and the real predictor of growth, of the economy, of the wealth of a nation is not what you think it is, you know, gold and factories and anything else. It's actually education and the education capital that a country has. And if that is true, then we need to worry a little bit because China is something like 10 times our education capital right now. Okay.
Correct.
Okay, so that's premise number two. Premise number three, and this is something which is really, really interesting and possibly highly controversial. He's saying inflation is over, or the concept of high inflation is behind us. There are not going to be major price rises ahead. We've all got used to 5%, 6%, 7% price rises. Forget about that. Price rise is going to be much, much lower, 2%, 3%, maybe something like that. I'll ask him to define the exact rate at that. And if that is the case, then there are the implications of that. Your salary hikes, wage, you know, the wage inflation that you've been expecting, increments at 7, 8, 9, 10%, forget about that. It's not going to be happening. Increments will probably be closer to 5% or 6%. Okay?
Yeah.
All right, fine. And finally, I think you say the women are going to be playing a more and more important role, and that's going to be underlying a lot of this. Mm-hmm. So that's what I think you're trying to say. Is that roughly correct? And
yeah.
Perhaps then you can tell me why you believe that these are the case. And I know you've got it written a full book, you know, which is explaining it. So
yeah.
I'm going to ask you to paraphrase it in words of one syllable for all of us.
Yeah.
So let's start off with the inequality part.
We all
believe that inequality actually is rising in the world. You keep seeing it, the 1%, there's global movements against this.
Yeah, remember that any discussion of inequality, at least for the last 300 years, is heavily laced with ideology. We've seen this from Karl Marx and whoever has ever spoken on inequality. It's not very hard based on data. Let me explain. What is the major in inequality? We've seen how many number of billionaires there are. And then there is the Credit Suisse wealth report, which says that the top 1% own more than 50% of the world's wealth. Well, for 99% of the people of the world, the only wealth they have is their human capital, is their education. When you acquire education, you acquire a stream of income coming out. So education is wealth. And what we know from any reading of history and any reading of contemporary events, that the rich people cannot get more than 16 years of education, can they? Maybe a few of them will go on and get a PhD. So they are, if you censored, at around 16 years, whereas the poor start off with zero, then get to two, then get to four, then get to six, then get to eight, then get to 10, then get to 12. So this is where inequality is inevitable, that inequality will decline because the rich...
The rich could still have access to sending their kids abroad to the U.S. or to wherever they are. The poor can't do that.
Absolutely.
So there is that gap.
Yes.
And maybe that gap is not going to be closing too fast.
And so therefore, absolutely right. The quality of education is very important. There's been a big increase in education in India. People are going to school. Now we need to concentrate that we need to increase the quality of education.
So if that is correct, then therefore, if you want to continue to, even if you're saying, I want to reduce inequality, then instead of saying, okay, let's tax the rich more or bring in an inheritance tax or whatever it is, that's not what you need to do as a policy prescription.
Yeah.
What you really need to do is make sure education continues to increase. Increase the spending of government on education, whatever, 5%, 6%, 10%, 15%, because that's the real wealth of the nation. Mm-hmm. Invest in better quality universities. Keep on doing that.
Yeah.
I know Jawaharlal Nehru is a very unpopular name around the corridors of power these days, but that idea that let's set up temples of learning, therefore, might be one of the roots to go as well.
Two problems with that statement of yours. Nehru did not really emphasize primary and secondary education.
Okay.
And I think that's a big drawback. The other point that you made is that the government should be spending more. I say no. And the reason I say no is that I've got a method, a proposal for financing of higher education.
Okay.
And that is that each student, whatever they pay in high school for their tuition, pay in college. So the government will not need, and the money that you will get, you finance the education of the poor.
Amitabh, let me now just get you inside. And looking at this from a policy point of view, it's always interesting to get Sujit and the basic concept out there. How far would you agree with it? That, we need to perhaps think of our priority, even when it comes to dealing with inequality, because the principle of how you deal with inequality has really been other things. It's been, let's find ways of getting more money to the poorest of the poor, which maybe may still be the case, and I want to ask Sujit about that. Mm-hmm. But in general, it's not about let's try and tax the rich or reduce the income of the rich, as used to be the premise in the 70s, and some people believe we're going back to that now. But just make sure that more and more people get high-quality education. He says inequality will disappear by itself.
Vikram, it's a very thought-provoking and a very provocative book. There's never a dull moment in this, but education is important. It's critically important, but it's not the only factor. We've been able to provide access of education to all, but the quality of education has seen a very sharp dip. We need a huge focus on quality of learning and a huge focus. And the problem is not with several parts of India. The problem lies in seven states of India. The problem lies in 201 districts of India, where you need a very concentrated attack on education, but you also need a very major dent on health and on nutrition. I mean, it can't be that you're saying that we'll achieve equality with 33% of your children being stunted, 33% of the world's stunted population being in India. So there's a huge problem there, and the country needs to lay a very, very focused attack on health, education, and nutrition.
So education, he's saying, fixes part of the problem, but it will not solve all of inequality. And when we get Yogendra and Harsh in, I'm sure they want to add to what Amitabh said.
Minor disagreement.
We have a major disagreement also. I mean, the program is called The Big Fight,
education
after all.
Education substantially helps your nutrition and your health.
How?
Because you know you need to boil the water, you need to do this, you need to do that. And if you will, as far as stunting is concerned.
But if you don't have access to the food in the first place, or the income to buy the food?
No. Now we're getting into another debate, but I'm happy to discuss. Look, stunting and wasting is largely a matter of digestion, and that is largely a matter of sanitation. So if he had said sanitation is our number one priority in addition to education, I would completely agree.
He'll say Swachh Bharat, we are doing Swachh Bharat, which is a key part of that. That answers it.
So basically, that's why I said a minor disagreement. Sanitation, if I were to decide on economic policy in India, I would say two focus.
I thought you were advising on economic policy in India now. You are advising on economic policy.
I'm advising, the Prime Minister's economic advisory. I'm not making it.
Okay, you're advising but not making it. Okay, so, you know, I'm not sure whether you're advising or making it or both, Amitabh.
Vikram, my view is a very major focus on ground implementation, which the government is now trying to do, to look at about 115 districts of India, do a very converge and integrate programs across education, health, nutrition. And to my mind, going beyond that, you know, a lot of poverty is directly correlated to physical connectivity. Look around. If you don't have roads, villages after villages will remain backward. Absolutely. And physical connectivity holds the key as well.
Okay. The question is going to come on one other, the subtext to what this is saying. If this is really the predictor of inequality, then you don't need to do things like high income tax, inheritance tax, estate duty. You don't need to go down that or finding some ways of taking away the capital of the rich. You don't need to go down that route because there are other ways of doing it and solving inequality better. Is that substantially correct, Sujit?
Well,
would you agree with that?
There's an additional reason why you don't need high taxes and why I would advocate, and I have done so, lower income tax rates, lower corporate tax rates.
Is
the issue of compliance. You have high tax rates, people don't pay taxes. Mm. If anybody in the world has found that out, it's us in India. The lowest compliance rates in the world, only 25% of what we should be getting as tax revenue we do get. So absolutely unconditioned.
But it's politically very popular. The reason it was so politically popular was that people said the rich are getting it. I don't think anymore
it is politically popular, and we've seen that from what has happened with the GST Council, how they're systematically reducing the high rates, and Adhya and other people are admitting that these high rates were not correct. So I think we're absolutely going down the right path. Lower tax rates gives you much better revenue and much better compliance.
With Sujit, I would say that we need predictability, consistency, clarity, and a low tax regime, which is one tax regime across the country. And that will give you revenue.
You know, Arvind Virmani and I had proposed a flat tax rate. Yeah. And I'm encouraged by what he said. If you're going to move towards a flat tax rate for indirect taxes, which I completely agree, we should move towards a flat tax rate for direct taxes, and the rate, which gives you more revenue than you're getting today, is about 15%.
15% flat income tax for everyone?
Yeah, absolutely. And you get more revenue.
Okay. People about to cheer. Were you about to cheer in the audience? Please feel free to cheer if you agreed with that. But hold the cheering for a minute, because the next part you might not like quite that much.
Yeah.
It's an interesting concept. Actually, when we're talking about politics, I just want to come to the second major thesis, and which is the question of inflation. Now, one of the really, really interesting consequences, which I thought as interesting as the inequality part, was you're saying that price rises is a thing of the future, of the past. And that's interesting, because every time, even politically, if you are to do a survey and you are to ask people out there, what's the single most important political issue, they will say price rise. Time after time, year after year, decade after decade, it's price rise. You're saying price rise is a thing of the past.
The reason price rise is a thing of the past, and around the world, mind you, because this book is about, let me just show it advertised a little bit, is about the world economy from 1700 and projections to 2030. the major component of price rise, inflation, is wages. Mm. Now, what we have noted in the advanced economies, that for the last 20 years, wage growth has, in nominal term, basically no inflation. Wages are not going up anymore, and therefore the total inflation rate, whether you look at Europe, whether you look at Japan, whether you look at the US, has been around 2% for 20 years. For me, that's zero inflation.
That's in developed countries, not necessarily developing, but you're saying it will start applying here also.
Now, if you start looking at developing countries, you find that the gap between the median inflation rate in developing countries and developed countries is down to 1.6%. So in other words, most of the country, you know, in India, we think of high inflation because of our past, but I would like to provide you the news, the viewers the news, and especially the RBI the news, that in this year, that this year, inflation in India is 2.7%, which is the fourth lowest in our 70-year history. That's what inflation is.
Okay.
2.7%.
There could be, so inflation can sometimes come down for cyclical reasons, as you know, for temporary reasons, or there could be a long-term trend.
And one second, just let me interrupt because I'm sorry. That's what the claim is, a lot of people. You know, 4 years ago, inflation was 10% and had been at that level.
Yes,
now,
that's what I'm saying.
10% to 2.7%, I dare say, is not cyclical. Though people in Mumbai think so, it's cyclical.
Hang on. If the inflation rate was 10% just 4 years ago.
Correct. Right? So we should ask, was it there?
Yeah, there's not enough evidence at this stage to say that for all time to come, it's going to be 2-3%. Yeah. Which is, I mean, I'm sure that's what the RBI is asking, because I know what you're alluding to. You're alluding to the fact that if inflation is always going to be 2-3%, cut interest rates right now.
Yeah. And that's what the rest of the
world is doing. Start preparing yourself for low salary hikes, low wage inflation, no increment. If you're expecting inflation expectations are 2-3%, the world is very different to when you're expecting it to be 5-6%.
Yeah. That's
today, we don't have evidence in India yet that that's going to always be the case.
Okay, as I said, this thing is about the world. I look at the world. There are about 200 economies in the world. Let's make it 150 major economies.
And, you yourself said India is equal to 171
India,
of them.
In India, we always think we are incomparable, we are unique.
But in your own book, you said that India is equal to 171 of those countries.
I know.
Quoting your own book back to you. And it shows you how well how closely I've read it.
Exactly. And we think we are different.
Okay.
The red blood flows through 7 billion people in the world, including the 1.2 billion in India.
Amitabh, the prospect of low inflation rate going forward, is that what
Sujit's
we should get used to?
Data in the book, it's true about the Western world, because what he says is that non-college going students, which were 81%, I mean, shocking statistics actually, in 1980s, come down to 64%, 2016, their wage rate has remained flat at 17.6 US dollar per hour. That's what you say.
Absolutely.
And he says that that's partly responsible for the wage rate because wage rate has remained static, the inflation has not gone up. And his theory is necessarily true about the Western world, not necessarily true about developing countries like India. There is no trend, no data to establish that in the book, that we are past in high inflationary trends as yet. We need a lot of inflationary targeting. We need growth, but we need to do it in balance with inflation.
Let me try and interpret what both of them are saying, and they are arguing. They're arguing very politely. It's actually a very heated argument because I think Amitabh, in a very polite manner, was strongly disagreeing with them. But essentially, if I can summarize what both of you are saying, you're essentially saying that, look, for skilled people, for people who are going to college, the era of expecting very high salary increases is behind us. And why is it behind us? It's behind us because the supply is so many. So many people are coming in from India and China and everywhere else who've got college degrees, that the era of expecting your salary is going to go on rising is not going to happen. Is that substantially correct?
Absolutely.
I would add one more thing to that, which is to say, going forward, there's going to be something else which you haven't written about in your book, but being a particular hobby horse of mine, I'm always happy to throw that into any discussion I ever have, which is artificial intelligence and, you know, the aspects that has its own dampening impact.
Absolutely.
That certain jobs themselves are going to disappear. Yeah. So not only is your supply of skilled labor going up, but on the demand side, many jobs are just not going to exist anymore because
I do mention
robots
it, actually,
are doing it.
No, it is.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm saying that's a demand side reason why that could happen. The Amitabh saying, yeah, but Sujit, that's all very well in theory. There's no evidence to have that.
No, let me
in
just
India.
Give the evidence because, I mean, seriously.
Well, there's no data.
There is data. There is a graph showing about inflation in developing countries, which is the other 170 countries in the world, and Philippines, China, Malaysia, Singapore, Hong Kong, I mean, Chile, Brazil. These places all have inflation 2-3%.
They're also growing at 2-3%.
No. China is not growing at 2-3%.
Other than China.
The reason, do not confuse the growth rate with the inflation rate. This is the common assumption, and I think it's completely false. They're growing at 2-3% because they're well up the production curve. They're much richer than us. So therefore, they have much less scope to grow, which is why China's growth rate is going to steadily decline. They are much 2.5 times richer than us.
The most important point about the book is that, to which I agree, I mean, you need to alter your Medical Council of India. You need to alter your UGC, your AICT. You can't run 21st century India with 19th century institutions. These will be the biggest job creators for India.
We are behind now. If it comes to, for example, education capital, China, 56 trillion. We are at 6 trillion, so way behind. We need to do something about it. All right, let me now invite the rest of our panelists on to come in and join us. Harsh Mandar, Jagdish Shettigar, Rajiv Gowda coming into the studio. Yogendra Yadav now joining us. Okay, let me kick this off with Harsh. Harsh, the basic concept that inequality is not as big a concern as people think it should be, and because the best way to cure it is education. How would you respond to that?
Overall, the core argument about education is something that I agree with, and it's pleasant to be, agreeing with Surjit for a change. But about inequality,
emphasis on the for a change.
But on inequality, I haven't read his arguments. But I would be surprised, even if education is seen as the principal capital around which you're measuring inequality, I find India's inequality are comfort level with completely different life options, including educational opportunities for a child who is born into disadvantage and a child in privilege, continues. So I really would like to engage with his argument that
you're saying because children born in poor or disadvantaged households just do not have access to good education. So we are far from solving the problem. Even if the solution is to use education to solve it, not even
some have no access to education at all. So if we have 100 million people who are circular migrants, their children have to travel with them, and they'll never get a chance of an education. And that's where poverty manifests itself. The quality of education, the ability to stay on in schools, remains very unequal. But I also have made an argument elsewhere that to me the material facts of inequality are less important than our cultural comfort level with inequality, the absence of outrage, and also the social elements of inequality of caste and gender. And I think those are very, very, very strong and sturdy and have, if anything, grown. And the absence of outrage to inequalities is fundamental to public policy, because people have said, why are we not making the investment? Martin Weiner asked this question. Why is India not making the investments it needs in primary education? And he concludes that it is because the lives of the children of the poor don't matter to us culturally. And I think that is okay. Really where I'd like to
Let me get a political sense of that before I come back and get a response to get everyone's views. Why is it that if this is so clear-cut that, and I think everyone is agreeing, Harsh and Sujit are both agreeing that education is really the key to it, why is it that through all of this period, and I'm going to throw it to both the Congress and to you, Dr. Shettigar, we don't give more priority to it?
Education alone is not sufficient, as Amitabh Kund pointed out. It is a social infrastructure.
Yeah.
But then again, the question, you cannot relate to the poverty. That only creates the potentialities. There is no correlation between the wealth and the social infrastructure, let alone the education as such. If that is the case, higher the education, more the wealthier. You cannot say that the education is not the end of it. It is only the
means.
Yeah,
so education creates the potential. So I think the point is that education creates the potential. And from
only
a global
potential.
Okay, Congress has been in power for a lot of this period. it's a matter of some sorrow that primary education is in the state that it is, secondary education is in the state that it is. Forget about the fact that India doesn't really have colleges and universities, which are, with a few exceptions, up there in the top 100 or the top 50 of the world. China is starting to get there. We are not.
Well, we have emphasized mass education, and we've moved towards universal education. We've tried to address nutrition as part of this whole process by bringing in midday meals. However, the delivery, the ability of the state to essentially achieve those outcomes, we're seeing survey after survey which shows us that that hasn't happened. Simultaneously, there's also been the emergence of the private sector, the non-profit sector in the education sphere. That was, some of the non-profit is always there. So really, I do agree entirely with this notion that education is one of the key things we have to focus on, much larger budgets, because I see inequality actually beginning at the age of 3. Where your parents put you to school makes a huge difference to the kinds of opportunities that you have unfolding before you for the rest of your life.
Okay, I think that's a fair way to put it. Yogendra Yadav, the very concept, and I know you, Yogendra, you've been very concerned about the problems of inequality. How would you respond to the thesis that dealing with inequality is not so much about let's find ways of taxing the rich or having policy prescriptions aimed at that, just simply focus a lot of attention on education and inequality would almost solve itself?
It's the incorrect way of saying something which is useful. Spending more money on education is certainly something that should be done. Spending more money on health, again, is something which is desperately required. As Amartya Sen had reminded us, capabilities is what we should be focusing on. Of course, that's absolutely right. We are lacking in that. The question is this instead of what?
Yeah.
There are three different things that we can say. And let's be absolutely clear. What is it that we are discussing? One, we could say many of the schemes that target the poor are actually very poorly targeted. Poor actually don't benefit from that. So let's change the design. Let's change those schemes. Perfectly well taken. Second, we could be saying that these are not the sectors where we should be spending money. We should not be spending money on the poor, on their food, on their nutrition, on sanitation, and etc. Instead, we should be spending on education and health. I'm not sure it's a good argument, but I'm willing to hear arguments for or against it. Third, we could be saying, no, we are spending too much money on targeting the poor. Instead, we should do general purpose thing. No point in targeting the poor in this country. Are we saying the third? The word poverty-tarianism seems to indicate that. And as I said, this shows only utter lack of careful thinking, utter lack of understanding of India. And it shows poverty of imagination, poverty of thought. And I'm sure you don't want to participate in that.
Yeah, so essentially, okay, actually, let me see if any of that is what is actually being under consideration or being thrown up. Spending on education in lieu of what? And as Yogendra was saying, the schemes that are targeting the poor or the poorest of the poor, should those still continue? Because at least until education, because education theoretically will still take 15, 20, 30 years to fully manifest itself, even if you have the best primary school education system right now. In the meantime, should you or should you not continue to have schemes targeting the poorest of the poor? Okay.
Nobody's saying... And certainly I'm not saying that none of those other things matter. We saw in that discussion with Amitabh. The point about the book is that education is the first amongst equals of what matters. So that's the first point. The second point, in terms of the empirical evidence, one finding that I was absolutely flabbergasted by and shocked is that what we know is that around the world, you have illiteracy rates, which is directly related to education. What percentage of the population is illiterate? We then have people defining poverty in income terms. Okay, so, and let's take the World Bank definition, where the World Bank has really spent a lot of resources going to measure poverty, and I participated in those in income terms. There's a perfect correlation. I was shocked. Perfect correlation between the share of illiterates in an economy and the percentage of poor in an economy. But and the graph is presented so people can look at it.
But hang on, so, Anne. As you well know, correlation does not imply causality.
No, the shocking value here is that I don't need to spend all the resources, since we are talking, of how to measure the poor.
Yogendra's point is, of course education matters, you should do education, but that's obvious, and so is true with health, but it should not be at the cost of anything which is directly going to reduce inequality, like schemes designed towards uplifting
the poor. If you're discussing the schemes, then let's look at how the schemes have worked. You know, India has got a lot of experience with the schemes. And starting off with, need I remind everybody, as way back as 1985, where Rajiv Gandhi said that our schemes only deliver 15 paise to the poor of every 100 paise that we spend. So this is a well-known fact. I mean, to come up with saying, let's improve schemes, of course, let's improve schemes. But at what level and how much resources are you going to give?
Okay.
I mean,
the fact that there is a very close correlation between income and education poverty is a very well-known fact. Let me just again point out that the Gini coefficient of inequality of income, India is somewhat moderate, but Gini inequality, index of inequality of education, India is one of the worst in the world. So yes, money needs to be spent on that. The only question we should be asking, because as a serious economist, you cannot say, do more of this. You always have to say, do less of that. Otherwise, it's not a serious argument. So do less of what? For example, let me just count a few things. Midday meal scheme, should we be closing that down? There is a child nutritional program, ICDS, should we close that down, reduce that? There is expenditure on sanitation and rural drinking water. What about that? Should we or should we not think of providing remunerative prices to the farmers?
Okay.
What about old age security? If we are saying instead of all that, then I have an issue with Dr. Balla. If he's saying, I'm sure I could encourage him to think along those lines, should we not be reducing the indirect and direct tax foregone? If Professor Balla says that, I'm all with him. I salute him.
Okay. So as a concept, what Yogendra is saying is, yes, we should focus on education, but does that mean giving up something else? Is of course one of the questions.
As an economist, this is an age-old question.
Drawing from what we have here, I'm trying to derive some overall philosophical policy prescriptions, if we like, right? That's what I'm trying to do. So I'm just trying to set the stage for this now. What I'm actually trying to ask all of you now is, what should our correct priority be in dealing with the issues around inequality? And there are two aspects to that. Number one is, inequality can be fixed by reducing the income or the capital of the rich. That is one approach to take. And that, by the way, is the approach that was taken. We just had, you know, the 100th birth centenary of Indira Gandhi. A lot of the philosophy that we used to have in India in the 60s and the 70s and so on and so forth was based around the principle Garibi Hatao, and that was partly linked to, let's have 97% income tax rates, let's nationalize the banks, let's have all of that, try and equalize everybody by bringing the rich down a bit and then by elevating the poor by various schemes. That is one possible approach. Is that the right way for us to go forward in dealing with the problems of equality? Or is it a different and by the way, I don't think it's then to say, spend on education, spend on health, while that is working, continue to do on the margins, investing in the poorest of the poor. So they're two slightly different views. And I think that's what I'm just trying to understand. Rajiv, let me come to you. The Congress in the past has sometimes tended to be sounding as if it's talking about a bit about you know, the second also. At least in the 60s and 70s, that used to be the approach. 97% tax rate, let's do it that way. What would be your sense of what the Congress Party in general is feeling is the solution to inequality right now?
Government's job is to ensure that every citizen has access to opportunities to improve their capabilities, health, education, nutrition, all that sort of stuff. Where is that money going to come from? Under the current circumstances, the government might want to get out of certain kinds of public sector undertakings and things of that sort.
Don't cut midday meals and the rest of it.
Absolutely.
Get out of wasteful areas like Air India, for example. The money going into Air India could be spent in providing primary education to, I don't know, half the country.
That's another part. The other is efficiency. Another is technology to improve productivity and delivery of education, healthcare, all these sorts of things. I think Amitabh would know the kinds of experiments that are out there and which need to be adopted on scale. Okay.
So, Amitabh, yeah. Now let me just come to you. So, this being the fundamental philosophical question that I think is arising, how do you do it? Yogendra asked the question that, okay, if you're going to spend more on health and education, where's the money going to come from?
To my mind, there's a huge governance issue. We need better implementation. We need far greater targeted implementation. It's not that resources are not available. If you look at the whole education field, I mean, it's the failure is in 7 states of India. Failure is in 201 districts of India. Focus on them. These are your most populous states. It's not that there are no teachers. There are teachers. Teachers are not going to rural areas. And we need to crack the implementation on ground. And you need to really benchmark, bring in the best practices of one district into another. You need to compare states with another states. You need to rank them. You need to make good governance as good politics. And that will transform India. The challenge is push the limits by rankings, districts after districts which perform badly. Monitor them very closely. Put it in public domain.
Would you also agree with what Yogendra was saying, that you do need to continue the schemes giving direct benefits to the poorest of the poor at the moment?
Much greater convergence of schemes. You need much greater integration of schemes. You need much better monitoring of schemes to ensure delivery on ground.
So improve the implementation, but keep them going, is what you're saying.
Social safety net that has to be there.
No, education.
Okay. So, Jay, would you be against...
The focus has to be primary education.
Okay, I'm going to come back to both. I'm going to come back to Harsh and Yogendra on this. But Sujit, your thesis, is it at all to say, do away with anything which is directly targeting the poor? Or would it be to say, you should continue to do that for the short term? I mean, I know I've heard you talking about a negative income tax.
Let me reiterate. Where will the money come from? Because at the core of Yogendra's argument is, you know, if you're going to spend on education, where's the money going to come from? Partly it's going to come from education itself. That is, all those people, simple scheme, whatever you pay in high school is what you pay in college. This itself will deliver a lot. Second, and this is something that I think Yogendra and the rest of us will agree with. Look, there are 2 schemes mentioned on how to take care of the poor, whether they be the bottom 20% or the bottom 50%. Let's say anybody above 50% of the population is not really poor, then we need to change our definition of poverty. If you are employed, then what I suggest in the book is a negative income tax. That is where you give, rather than have various schemes that the government has, which has deep implementation problems for the last 70 years. If we have learned one thing from them, we cannot implement it. Let's just give. So direct benefit transfers, which the government is doing, I would fully support, and that is in the form of a negative income tax. Okay. But the negative income tax only comes to those who are actually employed. What do you do with the core poor, which is 10-15% of the population? And for them, it is cash transfers, not midday meals, not anything else. Cash transfers, they'll be much better off. You know, the thing about midday meals and all of these programs is that the rich, the elite, which is another chapter of my book, the thinking of the old elite, they know better.
Okay.
They should tell everybody what to do.
Okay.
And so that I'm arguing, those days are gone.
Okay. So at a conceptual level, find a way of doing the education, the rest of it, do it at a better level. And directly transfer money to the poorest of the poor, either through cash transfers or through a negative income tax. See, does that solve the problem according to you?
See, that's a whole big debate, and I think we need much more time to talk about substituting. See, a basic income transfer I don't have a problem with, unless if it is substituting food transfers, substituting a school meal, substituting a public distribution system, substituting the rural wage employment program. These are programs we've developed over the years. There are problems in implementation, there's corruption, there's also corruption in defense deals, so we don't stop doing defense deals. We address corruption, but we have to fix the way. But I do feel we have to talk about resources, raising more resources. I'm not convinced. India has one of the lowest tax to GDP ratios in the world, and much of it is non-progressive taxation, much more indirect taxes. We do need to raise more resources, and we need to transfer these resources into healthcare and education. But one more point.
So you're saying you should increase taxes.
You must increase taxes.
Especially I don't
see how you can get there. But one last thing. You know, the problem of the dispossessed young that he talks about rightly is not just that they don't have the human capital to be able to participate in the economy. There are also no jobs coming up in the economy. And for that, we need to deal with the agrarian crisis where 50% of the workforce is. We just have 4% of public investment where 50% of the workforce is. So we do have to invest a lot more public resources in all of this.
Okay, fine. Yogendra Yadav, let me now come back to you, with the sort of a conceptual framework that we are looking at. So two aspects of it. Number one, should you be increasing taxes at all on the rich and trying to find a way of reducing their income? Because that also increases inequality, is one part of it. Second is, how are you dealing with the poorest of the poor? So should it be entirely, should it be entirely by the schemes of the sort that we have, or should we increasingly start moving towards other ways of finding their money? That's one part of it. And the second thing which was said out here is that the money which you need for healthcare and for education could be found not by taking money away from the existing schemes, but by the government ending some of its own wasteful expenditure, such as being in public sector, various public sector enterprises, Air India and the likes. If you do it
university education,
whatever it is, there are lots of waste. If you do away with that, potentially money will come for more spending on education and on healthcare.
Vikram, I'm happy that we are discussing inequality, which is incidentally different from discussing poverty, because there is an evidence that in the last 25 years or so, while poverty has reduced in India, definitely, inequalities have increased. And I'm happy that we are discussing education, because education is indeed one of the most critical channel through which intergenerational transfer of inequalities takes place. So we are on to the right subject. We should invest more in education, no doubt. But let education not be a black box. Let's focus on what is it that we need to invest in education, not in IITs, not in IIMs. If our focus is on inequality, then our focus should correctly be on schools. What we don't need are more school buildings. We have enough. Enrollment is no longer the challenge. The real challenge is quality of education in government schools. And for that, one of the most critical thing is teachers. I was surprised that Abhikant Kanji did not mention the fact that most state governments throughout the country have stopped recruiting permanent teachers. They are recruiting para teachers, contractual teachers, those who are not sure if they would come next session. And they have very little incentive in teaching. So improving the quality of teachers' recruitment, improving the quality of teachers' education, and improving the quality of their working conditions, that's absolutely critical. On higher education, the focus should not be on central universities. The focus should not be on the few institutions that make to global ranking. The focus should entirely be on state universities, which have about 90% students.
Okay.
If we are concerned about inequality seriously, this is what we should be emphasizing in education. Where would the resources come from? Where else should we go? Of course, we should cut down on wasteful expenditure. In the name of socialism, all kinds of public sector enterprise and all kinds of public sector bureaucracies were created. They should be reduced. May I also mention other kinds of wasteful resource use? 3 lakh crore rupees is spent every year on tax subvention, which mostly goes to the rich. Should we not be cutting that out? Why don't we discuss those things in television programs like this?
We just have.
Why should we not think of the 2 lakh crore rupees which has just been given in the name of bank remonetization? These are bad loans given to the ultra rich, for which the country is paying subsidy.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting.
This should be discussed. And incidentally, India is one of the few countries in the world that does not have inheritance tax. Why should we not discuss it? Because all the measures that we've discussed so far will slightly reduce the disadvantages of the poor, but it would do nothing to the advantages of the rich. For that, we need inheritance tax.
Okay, is that Is that a good idea? Is that something which you think should ever be done?
Look, no, I think it's a terrible idea. But hasn't worked what
in,
I want to come
it hasn't
to,
also worked in most of the countries
yeah,
where it's
exactly,
been tried.
Precisely for that reason. You know, they are great to, you know, Marx had a great idea, let everybody be equal. You know, you just don't work that way. Let's take the one issue that Harsh raised on tax revenue.
I'm just trying to get
no, I entirely agree with Sujit on that one. And I did talk about teachers, but my experience on ground has been totally to the contrary to what Yogendra Yadav said. States after states after states who've hired teachers in large numbers, teachers have not gone to rural areas, they've remained in state capital. Look at Patna, the teachers have not gone there. Look at Lucknow, teachers have not gone to rural areas. I mean, you need better implementation on ground. The problem is of the hard reality on ground. It's not just saying that you recruit teachers. Teachers have turned themselves into large unions who have politicized themselves.
Yeah, I want to come to absolutely on what Harsh said. I think that was an important point there. Look, our tax ratio is actually very comparable our per capita income. What the problem has been, Harsh, you will soon agree with me, mm-hmm. what the problem has been, which you said yourself, is that the share of indirect taxes
is
much higher than almost any comparable country, not the total tax base. That's what you need to change. And I don't want to get into this, but I think that's precisely what demonetization will help achieve, will increase tax compliance. You want extra revenue. Forever we have thought of, have extra revenue, put on a tax, whether it's an inheritance tax or 97% income tax or whatever. Those, you know, those things haven't worked. Let's just get real.
Okay, well, don't do things that haven't worked.
Yeah. And basically, when you want to get to those kinds of tax compliance levels, etc., you can do that through expanding the tax net. That would happen eventually.
So moderate, don't do crazy taxing.
Don't do crazy taxes.
Don't do crazy taxes. Have moderate taxes and trust compliance. Jagdish Shettigar, is that the way to go?
And increase direct taxes.
And more I money think in as far can. As the tax rate is concerned, we are at the comfortable level, even compared to the some of the OECD countries. Our tax, maximum tax, 30% is lower than that. So there is no scope to cut down. And I don't agree to raise the taxes, because I don't believe in order to bridge the inequality, strategy should not be put the ceiling. Those days of that is maximum salary of, I think, 7,500 in the, I think, the 80s, that is over. Now, when rich become the richer, don't forget that he is also bringing the lowest up. So we should see how to, improve the standard of living of the poor people. And in that context, education, of course, should be given the focus. The only difference is the strategy.
Okay. Amitabh, you had one last comment to make on the show.
No, I think, we should, if you look at India in totality, I mean, the challenge is on implementation to a great extent. The challenges of better monitoring, the challenges of better convergence and integration. And the focus has to be on education, but education is not the only way. You need health, you need nutrition, and you need a lot in rural areas. Let me tell you this, it'll be very difficult to remove poverty without physical connectivity. That plays a very key and a critical role. And let me also tell you, Vikram, if you do an analysis of India, and if you were to plot the entire India, this problem of education, health, and nutrition is essentially a problem of 200 districts, which India has to focus on. Okay. And it's a problem of seven states of India, where good governance has to be made good politics.
All right. Amitabh Kant, thank you so much for joining us. I know you have to leave us. I'm just going to quickly take two comments from the audience. Gentlemen there, yeah.
So the sense that I'm getting is that the new approach suggests ex ante equality, wherein you give equal opportunities through health, education, healthcare and public health. So suppose we have that. Given that, if any inequalities arise in the process, will we take that as an index of personal capacity or effort, or will we engage in ex post measures of wealth distribution and so on?
Okay, that's a really interesting question. I want to get a final closing thought from okay, anybody else? All right, fine. Look, we're almost out of time, so I'm going to perhaps get one last word from you, Sujit, on answering that. Look, this entire question, of course, about growth, inequality, how do you deal with inequality? Do you reduce the rich? Do you improve the poor? I mean, education by itself, even you would believe, is not a long-term. Eventually, inequalities will creep back.
Yeah. And also, look, who provisions education,
I think. And look, inequality, you'll never have complete equality. And what you would be reduced to, you're absolutely right, is an inequality due to abilities. So the whole approach of public policy, whether in India or elsewhere, has been on equality of opportunity. That's where the quality of schooling comes in. If I go to a school and it's not of just the same quality, I am not having equality of opportunity. So the goal of policy should be, and I very explicitly address this, equality of opportunity in all of its senses, and then let the chips fall where they may and let the rupees fall where they may. You know, the goal of society should not be to penalize individuals, should be to facilitate individuals to reach their maximum potential. And a lot of people need to be helped in that, absolutely. And where will you get the resources? From the people who are more able and therefore able to earn more. Nobody is suggesting that we should have zero taxation. It should be have efficient taxation. And that's unfortunately not something India has been very good at, or in implementation of tax policy, or in implementation of schooling or various other schemes.
All right, so I'm going to have to call it a truce just for the moment. Yeah, we may never get to equality, but at least certain things are obvious things that we should focus on. Don't just have schemes or policies to go after, you know, the rich or the people doing well for the sake of it. That can actually have its own negative consequences. Yes, the long-term solutions may come in really good, high-quality education, healthcare, and other opportunities for everybody. And yet, at the same time, at least for now, until all of that plays out, you do need to find some ways to address the poorest of the poor to make sure that at least in the intervening 10, 20, 30, 40 years till they are able to get to that level, they have a certain basic level of income, a certain basic level of amenities or food, and certainly eventually of opportunity as well. So that perhaps is my effort to try and bring some consensus in everything that we've heard so far. Thanks a lot for joining us. But I think this is a debate that we need to continue to have, because at the end of the day, before you decided, okay, this is the road down which we are going and how successful are we need to make sure it's the right road and heading roughly in the right direction. You're watching The Big Fight. We'll be back next week.